Welcome to the sermon podcast of South Hills Church in Costa Mesa. My name is Chris Kretzu, and I'm the campus pastor here. Thank you for carving out the time to listen to this today. I hope that you will be encouraged and challenged, and ultimately that you'll have a deeper sense of God's love for you. I'll be back after the message is over, but until then, I hope that you enjoy this episode.
All right, this is going to be a lot of fun hanging out with you guys today. So excited to be with you guys. For those of you who don't know who I am, if you're a guest, my name is Moses Camacho. I am the senior pastor of South Hills Church. We are one church in many locations. As of last week, we launched location number 11. Oh, man, we are so excited. We have 8 locations in Southern California. We have now 2 locations out of the state of California. We launched Idaho about 3 years ago. Next month will be the 3-year anniversary. And then last weekend, we launched South Hills, Virginia, officially public, up and running. So if you know anybody in the Virginia area, mainly down in the Yorktown Peninsula zone, feel free to let them know we have a campus down there. You'll be surprised. You'll be surprised. People are like, why do you make that announcement? Nobody's going to show up from California to Virginia. Like, no, I'm not expecting you to go from here to Virginia, but you will be surprised how many people are like, oh, I have a friend that lives down there. I have a family member that lives down there. And this is the mystery of God, where I'm just like, God, this is where you are God and I am not. And that's awesome that you get to do this in a way where I get to be surprised every single time. And so we're excited to be able to jump into today's series. We've been diving into this topic, tiny gold statues. This is week number 3. We did this series, and here's why we did this series. Mainly because we all, every single one of us, myself, or my staff, my campus pastors, our church, our leaders, our volunteers, everybody who walks around day-to-day life, whether you know this or not, there is the modern day idols. Now, you know, ideally, if I was to individually talk to you and you have a relationship with God and I was to ask you like, hey, where does God fall in your life? I think most people who have a relationship with God would know the answer, kind of like the Sunday school answer of like, what's the answer to this? Jesus. And so like everybody that actually has a relationship with God would say, oh, God's the priority of my life and God's number one in my life. And you ask my kids. Actually, my kids are very good testament to this. You ask all 3 of my boys, like, hey, what's number one priority in your life? They would all be like, oh, God, God, God. And I'm like, oh, really? Take a look at their time, where they spend their time. Take a look at the money whenever they get in, where they spend their money, and where they put most of their time and money into. I wouldn't say God would be at the top of that list. And so, but they know the answer. They know the answer that what it should be. And as I sit there and I reflect and I look at their time and where they spend their time and what you know, the words that come out of their mouth, the places that they spend their time with, the places where they spend their money, God wouldn't necessarily fall at the top of the list. But they do know what should be at the top of their list. And so this has been a series to help us all to not just know what should be at the top of our list, but to look at our time and to look at the places where we spend our energy and our thoughts and where we spend most of our concerns and worries and stress points. Where is all that going? You'll find that God is often not at the top of that list. Why? Because we live in a world that is constantly trying to distract you and derail you from keeping God at the top of your list. And that is obviously a mystery to many people, because I would say, you know, there's been times I've been in conversations where I have to talk people into God's plan for your life is the greatest plan for your life. And although that sounds easy to say, many people have to work through, like, who is this God? Why does he have a plan for my life? And why is his way the greatest way for my life? And that is a conversation I often find myself in, and having to help people understand that you have a creator who brought you into this world, that planned you, designed you, that gave you the gifts and talents and abilities, that this is going to be surprising. God had you in mind before your parents had you in mind. Before your grandparents even knew each other, God already knew that you were going to be born in this generation, and he knew what your identity was going to be. He knew what your gender was going to be. He knew what your gifts and your talents and your abilities and your personality. He knew what all those things were going to be before your own parents even knew you. So that's a conversation I often find myself. And so we're diving into this series to help us identify what are those distractions. What is this world using to constantly derail us and distract us from what should be and who should be priority in our life? And why should God be priority in our life? Because God knows you best. God knows you the most, more than your boyfriend, girlfriend, husband, wife, daughter, son, more than your mother, more than your father, more than your boss, more than your employees. God knows you more than anybody in your life, and he ultimately has the greatest plan for your life so you can have the greatest purpose, fulfillment, joy, peace, so you actually can enjoy life. You can actually go through the day-to-day life and not have to live in anxiety and stress and concern and worry and heaviness. That is not God's plan for your life. And so John Calvin said this, and if you guys haven't met Pastor Chris, he's the Chris Kretzu, he's the campus pastor here who's here mostly every week. In week number one, he read this quote that really stood out to me, so I want to share it with you guys if you haven't heard it. He said, John Calvin said that the hearts are idle factories. Basically, our hearts, our human hearts, are natural human idol-making factories. Now, I know that most of us probably, when we think of an idol, we think of like gold statues, and we're like, I don't deal with gold statues. Like, I don't have that problem. I get it. We don't have the old traditional idol issues that most of us have seen or read about in the books. But in today's world, what were those idols? Those idols were basically a replacement of God. That's all it was. Martin Luther said this. Martin Luther believed that any violation of the Ten Commandments begins as a violation of the first commandment, which is putting anything above God in our lives. So if money is above God in our lives, that's considered an idol. If the desire to be accepted is a desire above God in our lives, that's considered an idol. If the desire to be in control is a desire greater than God in our life, that's considered an idol. So it's modern day idols. And so ideally, you know, Martin Luther said, whenever we put anything in front of God, that is considered an idol. And if you look at the Bible, if you've ever kind of read from the beginning to end in the book of Genesis, Exodus, and you kind of just look at how God created people and God created nations and God created a movement, you see this pattern over and over and over. You see a pattern of people that came to know God and came to follow God and saw the awe and the greatness of God and started following in line with following God and God's guidance and direction and principles. But then all of a sudden, somehow, way, shape, or form, whatever reason was happening in that time, something distracted them, something derailed them, something got their attention greater than God, and all of a sudden they derailed themselves from following God. And then what happens when you derail yourself from following God? People follow, and all of a sudden there's a group of people that are derailed from following God, and all of a sudden you're making poor choices, and then all of a sudden you're in trouble, and all of a sudden you're needing to be rescued. So then at that moment of needing to be rescued, they cry out to God, God, we're in trouble, help us. What does God do? He comes in, he helps them, he gets them back in line. And then you read a few chapters later, and then they are again derailed and fallen away from God. And then they cry out, God, we're in trouble, help us. Sure enough, God comes in, helps them, and over and over and over. And as someone who's just reading the Bible, you're sitting there thinking like, what is wrong with you people? Like, have you not figured this out yet? Like, you follow God, everything's great. You don't follow God, everything's not great. You need to be rescued. Then you go back to following God, and everything's great again. But then all of a sudden, you get into everything's great. And then all of a sudden, you make poor decisions, and you're back to being in trouble. And as someone who's just reading the Bible, I could easily be judgmental and be like, oh, my gosh, you guys got to get your act together. You in Genesis, and you in Exodus, and you guys got to talk and figure this out. And then I sit there, and I look at my own life, and I'm like, oh, I need to get my own act together. Maybe I should follow my own advice as I'm sitting here. And so that is a reality, is there's a constant struggle and a constant battle with staying and keeping God as a priority in our life. And little do we know that at any given moment, any small distraction can take us in a different direction, a different path, where all of a sudden God is not even a thought anymore. When all of a sudden we're making decisions and God was never even in the conversation. And the next thing we know, we're making decisions on our own. And what happens? We often find ourselves in some trouble. And then when we find ourselves in some trouble, what do? God, help me. Help me with this situation that I'm in. Jeremiah chapter 2, verse 11 and 12 says, has a nation ever changed its gods? yet they are not gods at all. But my people have exchanged their glorious God for worthless idols. What is he saying? He's saying this. He's saying, you fall into this pattern over and over and over. You see my greatness. You see what I can do for your life. And then all of a sudden, next thing I know, you're trading me in for finances, or you're trading me in for popularity, or you're trading me in for the need of approval, or you're trading me in for wanting to control everything that's happening in your life. And next thing you know, like, you're down this path that you were never meant to go down to. So week number one, we kind of dove deep into the idol of power. I know there's like hundreds of idols that we could ultimately discuss, but we kind of chose like what are the most common idols that we struggle with. So what was the idol of power? It was a preoccupation with power that masquerades as confidence, but in reality, it's afraid of loss and humiliation. Henry Newman said, what makes the temptation of power so seemingly irresistible, and this is really hard to hear, what makes the temptation of power seem seemingly irresistible is that power offers an easy substitute for the hard task of love. It seems easier to be God than to love God. Easier to control people than to love people. Easier to own life than to love life. And this was a struggle that ultimately often we find ourselves struggling with. That was week number one. Week number two was the idol of approval. And the idol of approval was a desire for approval that masquerades as just wanting to be liked, but is really afraid of rejection and loneliness. When we live our lives expecting people to give us something that only God can give us, we are setting ourselves up for disappointment and others up for exhaustion. And so as we dove into that week, we figured out that, you know, often we expect things of people that they were never meant to fulfill in our lives, but then we often find ourselves constantly disappointed and feeling rejected, and we're wondering how in the world did we end down this road, and then we ask God to rescue us, and then God says, you're asking something of that person that they were never meant to fulfill. That's something that I was meant to fulfill, but you were looking for it in someone else. And so then that was week number two. And today's going to be a fun topic. I hope it is. It's the idol of comfort. And here's what the idol of comfort is. And I'm already hearing the, oh gosh, please don't mess with my routine. Please don't mess with my daily schedule. I like the comfort of my calendar. I like the comfort of my choices. I know them. I know what to expect, which is actually the definition of comfort, right? We already know that is comfort. So a constant craving for comfort can masquerade as being easygoing, but is really afraid of the stress and demands of life. So here's an example, you know, to really kind of help explain comfort. And some people are, I would say, gravitate to comfort more than others. But in some way, shape, or form, I would say all of us have a level that we enter into comfort because we don't want to necessarily step out and accept the risks that come with comfort. There are risks, right? Every time we step out of the comfort zone, you are taking the risk of the unknown. And when you step out of the realm of the unknown, that's not very comfortable for people. I have three boys that are driving me crazy more and more every day as they get older. And it's a lot of fun being a dad, but it's also very exhausting being a dad. And it's a moment where you're constantly trying to guess, like, where are you today? Like, what type of parenting do I need to figure out today? Because you're constantly changing. I have three boys, and the youngest one is probably the one that struggles the most with change. He loves routine, and he loves to know exactly what's happening. And whenever that is disrupted, you can see like the agony inside of him, like just not knowing how to process and not knowing what to say or what to do. And, you know, we've done all kinds of fun stuff. And if we ever go on a roller coaster, he hates roller coasters. Do you know why he hates roller coasters? There's too much unknown on a roller coaster. Is this thing going to go up? Is it going to go down? Is it going to turn left? Is it going to turn right? Am I going to go into the dark? Is there going to be water? Is there not going to be water? Somebody's going to scream in my ear. He hates that. He hates the mystery of the unknown of a roller coaster because he doesn't know what's coming next. And so this year, his whole world changed. He had to move out of his city that he was very familiar and comfortable with. He had to move out of his elementary school that he was very familiar and comfortable with. All of his friends went to one school. He went to a completely different school for junior high. The baseball team he played on since he was 8 years old, 9 years old, and that whole group of kids changed for the first time in his life. So he's gone through the most change possible, all in a matter of 2 months, and he has killed him. He is having a hard time with it. Now, I would say it's good change. It was a graduation. If you look at every moment, graduating from elementary to junior high, that is an upgrade. Graduating from one team to another, if it's a better team, it is an upgrade. Graduating from a small home to a bigger home, that is an upgrade. But although it's still change, it's very, very hard for him. Because it's out of his comfort. And anytime any of us have to step out of our comfort, that's a scary place because we don't know what to expect in that space or that realm. We don't know what to believe in. And I would imagine that if we kind of view the journey of life, it's kind of like this example of like being placed on one side of the jungle and being asked to walk to the other side of the jungle. And a jungle can be very beautiful, and a jungle can be very mysterious, and a jungle can have a lot of nature and a lot of natural beauty. But the other thing with a jungle is it can be very dangerous. And so I kind of view this example as like, you know, if we were all tasked with being placed on one side of the jungle and we had to get to the other side. And this jungle had mystery to it where there could be holes and there could be traps and there could be pitfalls and there could be landmines and there could be snakes. But then it also, there could be lakes and rivers and pretty birds and nature and trees and fruit and rainfall. And so there could be a pretty hike. But all of a sudden, reality is you don't know. You don't know. You get placed on one side and you're asked to go to the other side. Now, it would be really mean to have someone place you on one side of the jungle and say, get to the other side, knowing there's all kinds of danger in that process, right? So then if you get handed a map that says, here's how to get from where you're at to the other side and enjoy the journey. Here's how to enjoy the process of getting from one side of the jungle to the next and avoid landmines and avoid the pitfalls and avoid the traps and avoid the poisonous snakes and avoid all the dangers that come with this jungle. Here's how to avoid that. Here's how to enjoy the walk from here to the other side. How crazy would it be if we got this map and we said, oh man, so this is how we do it, huh? This is how I get from one side to the next and enjoy this process. That's great. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to put it right here. I'm just going to put this down and I'm just going to do this on my own. I'm going to live on the adventurous side and just try to get from one place to the next and see how it goes. That would be probably a very poor decision to make. Can we all agree on that? How many of us would agree like, hey, that's a poor choice. It's a very dangerous jungle out there. Yeah, it's beautiful, but it's also very dangerous. So if someone gives you the map to get from one side to the next and tells you exactly how to go on this journey, you might want to take that advice and listen to it, right? And the sad part is, as crazy as the example sounds, because we're all sitting in the room stopped and we're breathing and we're not running in the rat race of what's happening in life, that sounds very silly when we can actually think about it. But that is exactly what we do when God has given us the map of life. And we decide, you know what I'm going to do? I'm just going to put that map down right there, and I'm just going to do this on my own. I'm going to figure out relationships on my own. I'm going to figure out careers on my own. I'm going to figure out finances on my own. I'm going to figure out this happy, joy, sad, anger thing on my own. And I'm, you know what? I know there's all kinds of great advice in here and great wisdom and great direction and a way for me to get the most out of this life, but I'm just going to put this down and just do it on. that would be something that none of us would ever admit to. But yet, if you look at your daily life and you look at your daily choices, how many of us do that? I'm guilty of that, especially when I get into the comfort zone, because I already know. I already know this path, or I already know this journey. I already know this example. I already know this decision. I've already made this decision before. So now I have my own map, and I can go off of it. But then what happens when I get into a space where I don't know? God, rescue me. God, help me. God, get me through this. And so as we get into this, one of the greatest idols, is the idol of comfort. What is comfort? Not wanting a change, not wanting to be examined, not wanting to wrestle with doing anything different to make our relationships better, to make our life better. We get into this zone where it says a constant craving for comfort can masquerade as being easygoing, but is really afraid of the stress and the demands of life. What ideally is it that comfort does? Comfort puts us in a place of known, right? So what are we really trading in for comfort? We're trading in improvement. What is comfort? Comfort is the death of improvement. You can have a greater career. You can have a greater journey. You can have a greater relationship. You can have depth, and you can have meaning. You can have purpose. But when we enter into the zone of comfort, we find ourselves that we settle for what we know versus what we don't know. And if I've ever noticed God move inside of people's hearts and lives, I've never seen him do miraculous things in comfort. I've never seen like someone's life drastically change and him come into their life and say, you know what? Don't change anything. Keep using the words you're using. Keep having the thoughts that you're having. Keep living the life that you're living. And then watch how great your life is going to be tomorrow. He's never done that. Whenever I saw someone or a nation or a person be drastically changed, God always changed the way they talked, the way they lived, the choices they made, the places where they hung out. There was always a disruption in their comfort. It says we've said over the last few weeks that we just can't remove an idol, right? We have to replace it with something more beautiful. So if we were going to replace comfort, what would we replace comfort with? And so in Genesis chapter 2, verse 15, it gives us the example or the motivation that God tells us what we were wired to do. It says, Genesis 2:15 says, the Lord God took the man and put him in the Garden of Eden to work and take care of it. That word work in the Hebrew language means it's actually translated to abad, A-B-A-D, abad. And it means work as in physical, do something, but it also has a deeper meaning. So I want to expand your thinking on this for a second when you see the word work. Abad in the Hebrew language also meant service and worship. And so when we stepped out of our comfort and did something different, did work, managed to do something above our norm or our comfort zone or our repetitive motion, it was an act of worship and service. And so work gives us three things to our human heart and our human life. Number one, it gives us the satisfaction of supporting ourselves. It gives us the privilege of co-creating with God. And it gives us an avenue to worship God. Tim Keller echoed this in his book, Every Good Endeavor, when he wrote, work is as much as a basic human need as food, beauty, rest, friendship, prayer, and sexuality. It is not simply medicine, but food for the soul. Without meaningful work, we sense significance and inner loss and emptiness. People who are cut off from work because of physical or other reasons quickly discover how much they need to work to thrive emotionally, physically, and spiritually. I saw this in my mom. My mom was, I want to say, 66, 67 when she decided to retire. And all of our siblings kind of laughed when she told us she was going to retire because we just knew it wasn't going to work. And so sure enough, she was like all excited about retirement, as she should be. But then like a month, 5-6 weeks later, she's like going back to work. And I'm just like, what happened, Mom? She's like, I can't just stay home. I gotta do something. I just can't just wake up every day and just sit there. And so she found inside of her inner desire of wanting to do something. Well, that desire was actually placed in her. It wasn't an accident. When God created this world, it was very clear. There were 6 days of work. And then one day he rested. So he was very clear in the pattern of what he expected people to do because of the way they were designed. It was work and then rest. Work and then rest. Rest was the work part was kind of like, okay, I got this part. The part that really got me was the rest part. And I remember like having to learn the rest part, like the take the day of rest. And here was the greatest learning I had from that. When I removed myself from my daily activities, I learned that God can still make things turn and make the world turn without me. And that was like an aha moment for me where I'm just like, oh, so you're telling me that the world is still going to turn if I'm not in it, working it? It's like, yeah. So you're telling me that my job can survive if I'm not in it every single day? Uh-huh. You're telling me my kids will stay alive and somehow, some way, still manage to be there the very next day if I'm not in their life every single day, every single moment? Uh-huh. And it was like this like aha moment where it was like, so you're telling me you're God and I'm not? Yes. That's exactly what rest is for. It's for you to remember who is God and who is in control. And although you enjoy being in control, and although you enjoy working, it's also important for you to rest so you could be reminded who is bigger than you. So there's a lot of fun conversations God and I have every now and then that you guys get to benefit from. The opportunity to worship God, Colossians chapter 3, verse 23 and 24. Whatever you are doing, work at it with enthusiasm. As the Lord, not for people, because you know that you will receive your inheritance from the Lord as the reward. Serve the Lord Christ. Now, in this example, it says, whatever you do, work at it with enthusiasm as for the Lord, not for people. And everything that we do, it could be tied to a person. If you're an employee, there's probably a supervisor or some sort of boss above you. If you're a boss, there's probably an employee below you or customers. If you're whatever we're doing on a daily life, if you're on the road, the person that you have to, you know, follow guys, rules and regulations is a police officer. So if you're a police officer, there's a supervisor or someone above. So anything you do, it has a tie. If you, you know, work for a business, there's someone above you. If you own your own business, the customers are pretty much your boss. So there's always some sort of tie to an individual. But in the scripture, here's what you find. It says, if you want to have greater meaning than what you're doing, if you want to find greater purpose than what's already happening in your life, work at it as if you were working to honor God with it. Because if you only do it for others, it's going to have a short-term enjoyment, fulfillment. But if you wake up every day saying you're going to do this to honor God with your life, and the people in your life may benefit from it, and they probably will. But if your bigger picture is doing it for God, there's going to be a greater, deeper meaning than if you're doing it for yourself or if you're doing it for someone else. And as we dive into this, I want to say the biggest thing I want you to walk away with is do something. Do something to break the mold of comfort. Do something to break the routine of everything you know and everything you do. Because if I can just step into your jungle for a little bit, I bet you know you have a pattern and a circle that you walk around that's very familiar, you're very familiar with. And I could probably step in and say, man, your pattern and how you walk and where you walk and the steps you take, that's all great and all, but you're missing a big picture of this jungle. You're missing a big picture of this journey. There's depth and greatness further beyond it. But you're so familiar with your route that you're not even willing to consider the greater, deeper things that God has for you. And often we don't want to step out of that because it's comfortable to know and to know exactly what's going to happen, when it's going to happen. And although we may not find it's the greatest thing for us, we find that we often put it aside because it's familiar to us. And I want to read a scripture, actually a parable, which is a story. This is a moment where Jesus was sharing with the people around him, and he was trying to encourage them to use their life to the greatest capacity. And so when he shared this story so that people could understand the meaning behind it, not necessarily take it literally. It's a parable, so it's not like a real factual story. It's kind of like an illustration or story, kind of like the jungle illustration. So this is Jesus encouraging people to do something with their life. But he does it in a very kind of creative, you know, some of it was encouraging, some of it was kind of harsh, so he was pretty serious about it. So I want you to follow this journey with me. And in Matthew chapter 25, verse 14 through 30, says, "For it is like a man going on a journey who summoned his slaves." And then in some translations, just, you know, it's sometimes it's used slaves, sometimes it's used servants, sometimes it's used employees. So just grasp the understanding from here. "Who summoned his slaves and entrusted his property to them. To one he gave 5 talents, to the other he gave 2, and to the other one he gave 1, each according to their ability. Then he left on his journey." And so before I go any further, here's what's happening. This boss or this owner or this master gathered those that were in charge, that he was in charge of, and he handed them talents. He said, "All right, you're going to have 5, you're going to get 2, you're going to get 1. He kind of knew who they were, he kind of knew what they were capable of, and he gave them talents to go do something with, right? And then he left. And so then now these people were responsible to make their own decisions. And here's what I want to make sure you understand. In this story, what you can learn is this, that God brought you into this world. He gave you a gift and a talent. Some of you, he gave 2, 3, 4, 5. Some of you are like me, you got 1. But everybody got something. Everybody got something, okay? And so here's what happens. Then the one who received 5 talents in the same way, where are we at? Then he went on his journey. The one who had received the 5 talents went off right away and put his money to work and gained 5 more. So he had 5, now he has 10. In the same way, the one who had 2 gained 2 more. So he had 2, now he has 4. But the one who had received 1 talent went out and dug a hole in the ground and put his master's money in it. After a long time, the master of those slaves came and settled his accounts with them. The one who had received the 5 talents came and brought 5 more, saying, 'Sir, you entrusted me, you gave me with 5 talents. See, I've gained 5 more. His master's answer, pay close attention to this answer, says, "Well done, good and faithful slave. You have been faithful in a few things. I will put you in charge of many more things." So he was really happy with him. He basically said, "Man, good job. I gave you 5. You put it to work. You came back with 10. You know what? You've shown good responsibility with what I've given you. I'm going to give you so much more." All right. Now we go on to the next guy. Enter into the joy of your master. The one with the 2 talents also came and said, "Sir, you entrusted me with 2 talents. See, I've gained 2 more. All right, so he was given 2, now he has 4. Here's what his master says. His master answered the same thing as the other guy, even though he only had 4 and the other guy had 10. He said, "Well done, good and faithful slave. You have been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Enter into the joy of your master." Then, here's where it goes south. I mean, I kind of feel bad for this guy, but really he did it to himself. It says, "Then the one who had received the 1 talent came and said, 'Sir, I knew that you were a hard man, harvesting where you did not sow and gathering where you did not scatter seed.'" He was good with words. At least he was encouraging, right? So he says, "So I was afraid." And he admitted, "I was afraid. And I went and hid your talent in the ground. See, you have what is yours." Okay, so this guy decided to not do anything. He was afraid of losing what he was given. So instead, he digs a hole in the ground, puts the talent inside the ground. The master comes back. He digs up the hole again, brings the talent out, and says, "You know, I know you are a hard worker. I know you take a lot of risk, and you're out there, you know, sowing and reaping, and you're out there doing so much. You know, I didn't want to lose what you'd given me. So here it is, completely whole, just as you gave it to me." And look at the response he got. I mean, this was brutal. So I was afraid, and it was yours. But his master answered, "Evil and lazy slave. So you knew that I harvest what I didn't sow and gather what I didn't scatter. Then you should have deposited my money with the bankers. And on my return, I would have received my money back with interest. Therefore, take the talent from him and give it to the one who has 10. For the one who was the one who has will be given more, and he will have more than enough. But the one who does not have, even what he has will be taken from him. Now it gets really dark and deep. And throw this worthless slave into the outer darkness, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. So now it gets like super, super graphic, super harsh. But the message is this. The message is, you were given something. I would have rather if you have gone out and do something and lose it than to come back and say, I did nothing, and here it is just as you gave it to me. And so what ended up happening? The master said, okay, you did absolutely nothing. This is about the worst thing you could have possibly done. I brought you into this world. I gave you gifts, talents, and abilities. I gave you every opportunity to be in a place, in a world where you can actually do something with your life and contribute and have meaning and have purpose and have a greater direction. I gave you a map. I gave you a community. I gave you a local church. I gave you every opportunity for you to do something greater with your life. And you decided to do nothing. And so he took the talent from that one and said, you with 10, you're doing something. Here you go. Now you have 11. You keep using those 11, and soon you're going to have 12. And soon you're going to have 13, because you're doing something with what you were given. Before you leave today, don't leave without asking the question, God, what do I need to step out of? What's the pattern and the circle and the comfort that I find myself in every single day that is robbing me from the direction and the guidance of something greater and something deeper? What have I traded in for comfort because of pain or because of the unknown or because of fear or because of failure? What's in my life that I have just settled for the familiar and the comfortable, and I'm not taking the guidance and direction to step out into the realm of the unknown where you live, where I have to be dependent on you? And if we're really honest with ourselves, that is the scary part about comfort, is getting out of comfort and stepping into the realm of the unknown. But here's the beauty about this, is that you're not alone. And God's not expecting you to go down this journey of jungle without a guidance or direction, without a map, or without a voice in your heart and your mind, or people around you that love you and adore you, that want to see you succeed and grow and live in a place of purpose and meaning and depth. And so as we step out of the service today, I first off want to say thank you for being here. And thank you for being so engaged and listening to God's word and listening to the stories and illustration. But the hope is that before you walk out these doors today, you ask yourself the question, God, where have I arrived for trading in comfort and not allowing you to go deeper into a more meaningful purpose with my life? That would be an honest question for us to kind of just ponder in every journey of life, whether you're new, whether you've been here since the beginning, whether you're 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, 80. At the end of the day, we're still in this jungle going from one side to the next. And we can make those decisions to continue following the circle we're in, or take God's guidance and direction to see a deeper, greater meaning for our lives. Let's bow our heads.
Well, regardless of where you may be at in your faith journey, I believe that everyone has a next step that they can take. If you'd like more information about what it means to put your trust in Jesus, information about getting baptized, or maybe even attending a Discover class to grow more in your faith, you can visit us online at southhills.org/Costa Mesa, and then scroll down to the Next Steps section. If you'd like more information about tithing or supporting South Hills financially, you can visit southhills.org/giving. Thanks again for listening today, and I hope that I get to see you soon.